Viola Williams, Veal 7. Yes, you were saying about the Dutch refugees who came in and how this ship was mined.
Yeah,
I suppose there was a certain amount of danger in the seas, was there, you know,
well,
still?
The Navy was under the impression that it swept all the mines out of the river and out of the harbour, out of the bay. But obviously they hadn't, because it was an absolute tragedy that here were these Dutch who had a rotten war. They'd been chucked out of Indonesia, not too gently, and they were looking forward, at least for a short time, to visit a sort of peace and recovery. And the boat hit a mine.
Were there many lost, many deaths?
No, because it was in the river, you see, and it was fairly manageable. And the other boat, I think, as far as I remember, sort of collected them. But some of them were hurt, and ultimately we had to deal with them, because we were the females there who were doing sort of welfare work, and so we sort of kept an eye on them for 3 or 4 months. I think ultimately most of them were repatriated to Holland. They certainly didn't stay an awful long time with us, so I think they must have gone back to Holland.
You were saying that a group of 20 went, which isn't a large number, you know, bearing in mind the work you were doing. Were you reinforced at all, or did other...
No, we lost, if anything, we lost one or two. Some of our group went on, ultimately I think they went on to Japan. As I know Nell did. I think there were about 6 of them went on to Japan and left us with the rest of it.
Did other groups come out? You know, other organisations send women to sort of help?
We didn't get them in by Bangkok, but by the time I got to Malaya, the ban on east of Ceylon was over. And so we had navy and army and all sorts of bits and pieces there then. But we were still, apart from one group of women who came out also to do welfare work, I think, and they had the mess next to us, but it was their first encounter with the Far East, and the woman in charge of them simply could not take it, and to our horror, she was drowned in the pond in the garden. She drowned herself, which shook everybody very considerably, and it also hampered very much what they were trying to do, because they were all very worried about it. So it really left us doing most of the welfare work. But we didn't mind, because that's what we were there for. And it was always, always interesting. The men that you were working with, whether they were Sikhs or Hindus or whatever they were, and the Gurkhas, of course, and the British. We enjoyed doing it. It was terribly worthwhile. And anyway, in due course...
I think you're going to fly away, but before you do, did you experience any culture shock? You know, here you were, brought up in Britain, and having, you know, first of all, Bert going to Rangoon, and now then Saigon, and now here you are in Thailand. Were you given any preparation for?
No, all they were doing was making sure that we look after ourselves. I mean, I don't think the question of cultural shock came into anybody in authority's mind at all. I was all right, because I'd done 4 or 5 international camps in the UK. And on the continent, so I'd already and the first, the real cultural shock that I had, of any cultural shocks I've ever had, was the first breakfast that I had in Holland, when we didn't have toast and marmalade, we had cheese. And I can still remember that that was, to me, that was a tremendous cultural shock. And after that, I think one just sort of, well, it certainly never worried me. It never has worried me. One or two of them, I think, found it a bit difficult. One of the things that we had to be careful about was the fact that, because, as I just said, we it was a social life when we weren't working, which a lot of us hadn't had for a long time, and there were quite a number of us that went back with babies that got sent home. There were, I think there were two in my lot that did, but it was one of the things that I just had no intention of being sent back with her. I mean, we could do more or less what we liked, but I had no intention of collecting a baby.
Did they give you any preventative measures?
No, what you could do to find for yourself or to do for yourself or whatever. But I had an Irish boyfriend, both in Bangkok, and he came over to Malaya when I went over to Malaya, and he was he could have been very naughty if he'd been let loose, but he was fun to be with.
I suppose in those days as well, was it very different, you know, if you were a single parent, if you did get pregnant before marriage?
Oh, in a force together. Oh, no way. That's not what we were out there for, was to collect babies. So if you got pregnant, I mean, that was it. You got sent straight home on the next available transport.
Did any of the girls have abortions? Or?
I don't know. I don't know at all. It would have been a dicey proceeding, because they wouldn't have got an army doctor to do it, and if they had to do it, it would have to be a local one, and that would have been a very dicey proceeding. Added to which, I doubt very much whether any of us had sufficient contact with the locals to make that sort of contact.
Yes, I was going to ask you about the relationships with the locals. You know, did you mix with them?
Not much. Not very much. Not as much as one would have liked to. But there was always something happening and something going on. To some extent, I think I was lucky, because my Irish boyfriend, Mac, he had transport, so we could explore Bangkok, and we could explore the regions around Bangkok, and also he liked going to local feeding places in the evening, and we had one very favorite place. The Hoi Tin Lao, where we used to go whenever we could, and you could either have a little room to yourself if you wanted to, or you could go into the general restaurant. It was overlooking the river, and it was very nice. But we had one evening when we were just in the middle of supper, when the Chinese manager came up in great agitation and said that they'd got trouble down on the ground floor with two sailors who were drunk, and one of them was coming up the stairs with a broken bottle to hit anybody that he could, and he thought my Mac was probably the senior officer there, and would Mac please go and deal with it? Well, Mac hadn't got a clue what to do. So we went out to the top of the stairs, And Max stood at the top of the stairs, and there was just this sailor weaving his way up the stairs, waving this broken bottle, which he was going to damage anybody he could lay hands on. And Mac went over to the edge of the stairs and was watching to see what was happening when he missed his footing. And he went down on his back and he hit the drunk sailor with his bottle, and they all went down to the bottom of the stairs together. By which time, of course, there were enough people around to collect the sailor who lost his bottle. And I've always thought that was one way of quelling a riot. And Matt came back upstairs and we finished our supper. But it wasn't always particularly peaceful. There was, at the end of any war, there's always guns floating about. And I remember we spent one evening in a storm drain with bullets going all over the top of us. Who was fighting who? I had no idea. But we stayed in the storm drain until it was all over.
You were saying earlier on about Lord Mountbatten coming. Did Lady Mountbatten come as well?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Yes, I was wondering if you were introduced to him at all.
I was introduced, but only one of many, because we all went to the dance. That there was a huge gala dance given for Mountbatten and the King and all that sort of thing. And there were a lot of celebrations. I mean, we all worshipped Mountbatten anyway.
Did you?
Oh, yes.
Why was that?
Well, he was so good looking. He was good looking. He was a very friendly soul. And we respected what he stood for, what he did. We had two people that we really did think the world of. One was Mountbatten and the other was Slim, General Slim. And I never met him, but we always respected the fact that he'd been a good general, and his troops respected him too. But it was a very interesting time to be there, to be in that part of the world.
With your contacts with the Indian troops, did you get any feeling or information about the INA?
I don't think anyway that they would probably have said very much to us about it.
Did you pick anything up at all about?
I didn't pick anything up about it at all. I don't think we were probably politically oriented on that. Maybe if we'd known a bit more about the background before we went, we might have been more interested in finding out if anything was happening. But as far as we were concerned, we were dealing with very loyal 14th Army troops.
The other interesting aspect, you're talking of politics. Would you have had a vote for the 1945 election?
Yes. When the results of that came out, we were on a troop ship. I think we might have been going around, Saigon. Anyway, we were on a troop ship. And to my dying day, I should remember those results coming out, because every result that came out, if it was Labour, the troop ship erupted. If it was Conservative, the officers said, oh, well done. But the overwhelming, of course, was the row that was coming from below decks. With all the feeling that the Conservatives were out and that Labour was coming in. And probably the fact that what we've got out there, see, technically was still the Forgotten Army, and so that they would not have any particular leaning towards the Conservative government, which had been sort of more or less dominant, although it was supposed to be a coalition. So it was the lower decks that were really delighted about the whole thing. I think I have a feeling that I voted Liberal, because at that point we had a very good Liberal candidate in the Salisbury area, and I have a feeling that I voted Liberal as being rather neutral on the whole thing. But I can still remember that the row that came up from below as each election result came out.
How did you regard the result? You know, although you voted Liberal, how did you regard it as a very thinking young woman at the time?
I don't think I thought an awful lot about it, quite honestly. We hadn't, at that point, been so much inflicted by what the Labour trade unions were doing to the country generally. This is a bit jumping the gun. So that we hadn't got that sort of feeling that because it was Labour and because the trade unions had put Labour in and the trade unions were wrecking the economy of the country. I don't think we, that sort of, that our chief, I think, if you want an emotion out of that election, I think our emotion, certainly above decks, was that we were all so sorry for Churchill. Because, I mean, no matter what anybody said, he pulled us through the war. And to have him go out like that, I think it was an overwhelming sense of almost injustice that he'd done so much. And also, I think some of us had also begun to realise that the Americans and the Russians were taking over the helm of things, and that Churchill was feeling slightly out of the international side of it, and then to be chucked out by his own people, I think we were all very sorry for Churchill at the time. I mean, obviously we couldn't do anything about it, but there was a feeling about that, definitely.
The other thing I was going to ask you, Miss Williams, you know, is with the work you were doing, the welfare work, your canteens and looking after the health of the men, did you always have adequate resources? Were there, you know, good supplies of the necessary drugs and medication, food, the canteen, cigarettes?
I wouldn't say. It was rather spasmodic. We always had to be a little bit careful with what we were dishing out, because just to make sure that we got some for tomorrow and the next day and the next day. But generally speaking, the supplies were beginning to come through again. And of course, the powers that be never dared let the troops be without cigarettes. I mean, that was absolutely the rigour, that they supplied cigarettes to the troops that wanted cigarettes. We also got quite good liquor, I seem to remember. I think we got 2 bottles of whiskey a month or something. It was quite good anyway. It was adequate. And especially as quite a number of us didn't drink, and those of us who did. But Christmas Day was one of my most in Bangkok was one of my memorable Christmas days. I had some very memorable Christmas days, so that was one of them.
That would be 45, would it?
Yes. We did our duty in the morning, and we went down to every conceivable unit that we defined, and each one gave us a drink. We were all tight as tips by the time we got back to the next. And then we had a full Christmas dinner. We had quite a lot of other people from other units in, and we had a full Christmas dinner turkey, Christmas pudding, mince pies, coffee, the lot. And then in the afternoon, Mac and I went right down the side of the river, down where there was a resort. It wasn't much of a resort in those days because it hadn't been operating, but it was supposed to be a resort. And there we bathed, and then we had a full Christmas dinner. And I always remember that Christmas day having two full Christmas dinners in a temperature of up in the 90s. It's only probably wants fasting. I don't think I slept much that night. I was so full. But it was a good Christmas. One of my very abiding memories from Bangkok, which was nothing really to do with the war, but during the Mountbatten celebrations, we had a number of dinner parties that we went to, and of course, being the only females there, we were in great demand. And I remember at one of them sitting next to the Danish ambassador who had come back, and we were talking about the war. His English, of course, was beautiful, and we were talking about the war generally. And he said, "How could we work with the Japanese after what the Japanese had done?" And I remember saying something about the fact that, well, the war was over, and we got to look to the future, or something like that. And I can remember him turning around and looking straight in the face and saying, "You English are such bad haters." And when I said, "What do you mean?" he said, "Well, you find it very difficult to hate anybody, don't you?" And I said, "I don't know, I didn't know that we were." He said, "Well, you weren't actually invaded during the war like we were, but you suffered very badly in the war, and yet you still don't speak badly of either the Germans or the Japanese." And it astonished him, the fact that we couldn't hate. I mean, I lost my brother in the war. Well, so what? It was a war. I lost an uncle, but I mean, it was the same on both sides, presumably. I mean, I find it very difficult to. This is nothing to do with this, but it's something which is a tail end of the war, is that I wish we could drop all this war remembrance stuff. I know one's got to remember because you don't want it to happen again, but we keep on emphasizing over and over again a lot of the bad things that happened, and it only keeps alive a nasty feeling. And I'm digging a lot of this. And I don't know. I think it's an awful pity that we keep on bringing it up. I know some of the war films were flag waving, and I suppose they needed to be flag waving. But there's a lot that we could quite comfortably drop now, I think. And when you see, I've got mixed up with Israel, because I worked with the Arabs and I was very pro the Arabs, so I obviously came in contact a great deal with the Israelis, and I feel I'm pro Arab, I'm anti Israel. And anti what the Israelis have done, what they're doing. But I can't help feeling frightfully sorry for the young Israelis, because they weren't part of the Holocaust. They're probably third or fourth generation from the Holocaust. and they're growing up with an atmosphere of hate all around them. And I feel terribly sorry for them. Although I disapprove entirely of what they're doing at the moment. That's not on record, was it?
You know, with your experience to date, and this would be mainly the Rangoon and Bangkok, perhaps Saigon as well, you've mentioned the problems, you know, with being a woman and an officer and relationship with other ranks. But sort of linked with that, did you find there was much racism between the British troops and the Indians and Gurkhas? Was there any?
No. They shared the same experiences. And the only one that I found that was the CO that took us round from Rangoon round to Saigon, who was an officer of the old Indian army. And as far as he was concerned, the Indians were Indians and the British were British. But that was the only one. The other ranks, I mean, they'd done the same things right the way down.
So how long would you have been in Bangkok?
I was there about six, seven months.
And after that?
After that, what happened was I caught a very bad cold, and my mother, you see, died of TB. And the moment I had a very bad cold, I went into the hospital in Bangkok, and I mean, that was just out of this world. The military hospital in Bangkok. I had a room there that was looking out over one of the Klongs, one of the canals, and all the other ranks, all used to go down there and do all their ablutions of all the skeletons done. And I mean, it was absolutely hilarious. I mean, even the Sikhs would let their back hair down and sort their hair out and put it and roll it all back up again and put it back in their turbans. And the food was pretty awful, but it was an experience, and I'm glad I went through it. But because my family had got TB in the background, they thought they'd better send me home, so they sent me to round to Malaya. And I went in a cargo boat, in a small cargo boat, from Bangkok, from the docks, round to Singapore. And we met a cyclone on the way. And I was the only woman, of course, so one of the mates had given his bunk up to me. And if I was in the bunk, it meant you literally had to fasten yourself in with straps because you were just bucketing all over. But my chief members of it, luckily my stomach just sorts these things, there's no problem. But we tried to play darts in the mess room with the boat standing on its end. And I can still remember, so the darts were going in all directions. But it only lasted. I mean, the whole trip was only about 10 days. It was a fairly slow trot round. But I can always remember that cyclone and going up, passing upside down, standing on its end, playing darts. And then in Malaya, I picked up another canteen, and we lived in the. There were quite a lot of us by that time, and it was a mixed lot by then. We got Wrens, and I think we got Ats with us as well. I'm not sure that we had. I don't think we had Waff, but I know we had Wrens, and we lived in the YWCA in Orchard Road.
In where would that be? Singapore.
In Singapore. the Y had still got some staff there, and they sort of vaguely looked after it. And